Welcome to Success Stories, brought to you by SNS Activewear. I'm your host, Marshall Atkinson, and this is the podcast that focuses on what's working so you can have success too. What happens when both you and your wife lose your jobs and also find out that you are expecting your first child? Naturally, you start a business and work both hard and fast to grow your new company. That's how today's guest, Jonathan Tynes with Kickprint, started out with his shop. Since then, he and his wife, Danielle, have continually evolved their entrepreneurial journey. On today's Success Stories podcast, we'll learn all about starting and evolving your business to processes, to time management, all the while working with your wife as your business partner. It's going to be a fantastic show and one that you won't want to miss. So, Jonathan, welcome to the Success Stories podcast.
All right. Thanks for having me. And thanks for the awesome intro.
Yeah. And we've known each other for quite a while. And it's so fun to do a project together like this. I can't wait to dig in.
Me either. I'm excited. And you've been an awesome guide to a lot of things in my career. And it's been a lot of fun just watching you grow and us growing together. So let's do this. I'm ready when you are.
All right. Well, here's question one. So let's begin the episode today by discussing your entrepreneurial journey. Talk about the evolution of Kickprint and then also how that feeds into your new business, Snow Monster, which of course is not doing anything with apparel decoration.
Yeah, it's totally different. The entrepreneurial journey of how basically and how these feed together is kind of interesting. Kickprint is custom apparel and t-shirts, which is, you know, where this podcast is focused on. That's where we got started. And then Snow Monster is like a New Orleans style snowball stand. And it sounds like two totally different worlds, and it sort of is, but understanding like our entrepreneurial journey and how that tied together and how really once we understood like the fundamentals of running a business, it kind of helped grow both of these and how they cross-pollinate, which is really interesting. So long story short, we started our business in our garage and was just running everything manual presses. And for quite some time, for probably about a year, I was only selling things what I could do, which was very limited with a manual press. And then I started desiring to grow more and more and have more revenue. So we've sold bigger and bigger jobs. And that actually broke us down. We had issues where like I sold a 2,500 piece job on a manual press in my garage. Like the guy that was helping me print at the time, I think he like hurt his wrist and his forearm. His muscle was goose egged out. He hurt it, had to go, I guess, get surgery or something. It's been about 7 or 8 years now, but I ended up having to do it. And while I was printing these 2,500 shirts, I got an order for 2,000 shirts at the same time, and another order for 1,000 shirts that was 6-color front, 6-color back, 6-color both sleeves. Yeah, phenomenal amount of work. So at that point, I had two choices. One, outsource the work. Number two, turn down the work. And turning down the work, I just couldn't fathom turning down thousands of dollars. And so that's when I discovered, you know, bringing on people to help you out doesn't mean that you lose control of everything. And that was probably my first encounter of contract and subcontracting a print job out. It went flawlessly for the most part. Didn't have any issues with that. So that's where, you know, we kind of realized like in order to grow, it's okay to use other people, not just your employees, use other shops. But the other thing that was really big in that is during that time, I started struggling like now that I could broker and outsource, we had this huge capacity. And so how do you fill that capacity and that demand? You have to have what's called sales velocity, which is somebody interested in your product and then buying and then moving them through that pipeline faster. And what we realized is that basically sending people to a catalog or sending people to saying, hey, what do you want? We have to get people to figure out what they want and then sell them what they need. And I call this the chocolate covered carrot. Everybody wants to eat chocolate, but they need to eat carrots. So we give them the chocolate covered carrot. And so we do that by asking questions, getting them to understand what they want, and then helping them make a decision faster. The reason how these kind of tied together is, you know, with Kickprint, if you're in the custom apparel industry, there's like 1,000 different garments you can sell. If you open up promotional products, that's a whole different can of worms with like 100,000 different options. So you have to curate things offer people the ability to say, hey, we can print on 20, we can print on 100,000 different things, but these are the curated ones for your industry. And people typically don't like to make a bad decision. They want to make a good decision. And so oftentimes they'll make the decision off of your suggestion. Every once in a while, you'll get somebody that wants to do the research themselves and find a unique product, but most of the time they don't. How this ties in with Snow Monster is we started out with 50 flavors. It's actually grown since then. 50 flavors is a lot for here in Missouri. It is almost nothing compared to what you get in New Orleans. Like there's like 200 or 300 flavors, and people don't have decision paralysis because it's normal. Here, it actually paralyzed people. We had people coming to the menu, not knowing what to buy, and some of them just leaving because it was too intimidating. Realizing that, we took the same concept with Kickprint, where we would bundle products. And even though we can sell 1,000 different shirts, we've dialed it down to about 25 shirts. We call it our top 25. And that's what we sell 80% of the time. So we did the same thing with Snow Monster. We drew people in. Here's what's interesting is, hey, we have 50 flavors. We have unlimited concoctions. That was like our marketing for Snow Monster. But how we got people to make the decision is had suggested concoctions and then deal of the week. And we found that most of our sales were from the suggestions. And so we just wrote a little script out and gave it to our cashier. Like you wouldn't think of giving a script to a cashier, but we did, and said, ask these questions and then make suggestions. And the questions were, well, I don't know what to get. I'm overwhelmed. So what do you like? Do you like cake flavors, fruit flavors, or sour flavors? Oh, I like fruit flavors. Great. Do you like pineapple, or do you like orange, or do you like watermelon? I like watermelon. Great. I suggest the watermelon and maybe pineapple with cream and ice cream. And they would make the suggestions of the toppings that would build value and make the price of the snowball go up. And that's when we saw a massive increase in sales. So bundling things together. Also, I've always heard don't sell products, sell offers. And in short terms, for those of you wondering what that means, a product is just like, hey, here's a t-shirt. Hey, here's a snowball. An offer is, here is something grouped together that's special, and it's at a limited time. And that's really what an offer is. So we basically did that. We've done that with Kickprint many times. Hey, we got a t-shirt with a free banner and stickers, hour free graphic design, and it's 10% off, and it ends Friday. That would be an offer. With snowballs, we did the same thing, like basically group these flavors and toppings together, and it ends Monday, and it'll never come back ever again. When we basically told people, this is never going to come back, or if it does, it's going to be a long time from now, people would just rush and order it, whether they like it or not. And it was this FOMO effect that was kind of interesting. That's been the way that I think the biggest thing, the entrepreneurial journey, like, you know, we've ran Kickprint for 8 years and we just randomly started Snow Monster. It actually came about because we had some people heat pressing for us that needed more hours. So we thought, oh, well, open a snow cone stand. They'll run that half the time. They'll run the, you know, heat press some t-shirts half the time. And that is not what happened. Like we ended up with 15 employees, a whole separate building, we have two units, commissaries. We got three buildings now at Snow Monster. And I mean, it's only been open for 6 months. So it's ridiculous. But all that really changed in that was we took the processes that we learned in Kickprint, which is, as far as sales, making it easier for people to make the decisions, but give them the option to customize. And that's really what you have to understand is just because someone can order anything, you need to kind of have, that's why, you know, McDonald's and all these places, they have combo deals. You can get lots of things a la carte. I went to a barbecue restaurant recently and everything was a la carte and nothing was bundled together. And I got so confused, I ended up overspending. I accidentally ordered a bunch of stuff I didn't need, had way too much food. I left very frustrated. And then I didn't go back for like 2 years. And then when I went back, they had added just a handful of things on the menu. And I literally ordered, oh, I'll take a number three. So making that, most people don't think of that in terms of screen printing, building packages, and then suggesting when people go, hey, I want some t-shirts. Well, what industry are you in? Cool, you're lawn care guy. Well, I see a lot of people doing some Gildan shirts. We might want to upgrade to this shirt if you like it like this. Some signs, some postcards and door hangers to hang on the doors of the neighbors, and then some magnet signs for your truck. That's a package deal. Would you want to send the package deal, or you want to just kind of just start from scratch? And a lot of times people go, yeah, give me, let's see the package, you know, and that's really all you're doing. So you're just bundling products, making people's decision process easier. And that's how we've kind of used the same model for both businesses that's really helped on both sides.
And this reminds me of a quote from Seth Godin, which is, don't try to find customers for your product, find products for your customers.
Oh, yeah, that's good. That's very good.
And that way, that's how you build success, is by engineering things that you know people are going to like. And I really like that idea. And I like what you're doing. And I think you're very smart about it. And really, what's amazing to me is how you've learned through your entrepreneurial journey about how business should work and employees and products and all that. And you're taking that and moving that into a completely different area with the snow cone idea, and realizing that a lot of it is all the same. That's the sweet spot, I think. It's just finding out what you're good at and then hiring people to do the work for you and letting them, you know, giving them some guardrails and processes and procedures, and then get out of their way.
Well, I think it's very important, because to understand the fundamentals of business and understanding, like, hey, that you could copy this process with lots of businesses, because there's a lot of anxiety floating around with entrepreneurs right now of what if they go out of business, or what if inflation pushes them out? The fact is now we actually did Snow Monster as an experiment, and we were totally fine with losing 100% of our investment. We went into it not really thinking to turn it into a business. Like, it was literally a side venture. And the only reason why we did it was, like, I kind of realized, like, time is ticking away. I've sat on Snow Monster for 5 years, me and Danielle did, believe it or not. And there was a lot of things recently that we were thinking about doing, and then we didn't do, and then someone else did. And I realized, like, it's now or never. Like, we need to just do it. If it succeeds, we'll deal with the success. If it flops, then we learn something. We had some fun. So we set some ground rules before we launched that Snow Monster could not take away from the primary business, which is Kickprint, and it could not invade our lives and take away from our children. So that means that we can't be the ones always running it. We have to balance both businesses and build processes for those. The reason why I say that is because a lot of business owners right now are nervous. Like, if they just have a slow day or a slow week or slow month, I mean, they're literally having a hard time sleeping, get on medication because of massive anxiety. Once you realize, like, hey, get the fundamentals down. And if your screen print business or your snow cone business, whatever business you have, doesn't work out or gets impacted by the economy, you could take those fundamentals and pretty much carbon copy it. Since doing the second business, I don't recommend doing a second business for everyone, because it can, if you allow it, consume and destroy the primary business. But the thing that it's taught me is, like, I could literally go into pretty much any industry and carbon copy, and within 6 months have a successful business, because basically we ground tested a lot of these. There are probably some industries, obviously, that this is, some of these fundamentals won't work. But if you're selling a product to consumers without a lot of red tape, then this would work. So I could literally, if this doesn't work, I could turn around and sell Cajun food. You know, I could turn around and sell food item or whatever. And I think another thing too is you have to market being totally different, not as an improvement. Or that's the thing that we did with Snow Monster, is we marketed as if it was something that was never done before. Reality is there's like 4 snow cone stands. So we decided not to call it snow cones. It's snowballs. Snowballs and snow cones are like tacos and street tacos. They're very similar. So having to market that massively different is what piqued everyone's curiosity. It got us on the news. We went extremely viral here locally, and it actually crushed us to the point of not being able to really handle the volume. Like, we had 2-hour and 10-minute wait times for snow cone. I wouldn't wait for a prime rib for 2 hours, but people were, you know. So, but yeah, I mean, I think once you get this set of rules and you get kind of a playbook, you could take this. You don't have to have as much anxiety. You're willing to take more risk in your business, because if it fails, oftentimes it's not the end of the world if something fails. And that's what people have to understand. You have to understand, if your business fails, you are not done. You're not going to be homeless. You know, you are going to be able to pick up and move on and grow from that. And that's what people's got to understand. Like, take the risk, do it now, because you're going to one day not be able to do that. So that's really kind of what, you know, I'd say biggest thing I've taken from that.
So, Jonathan, to make any business work, you need processes to do the heavy lifting. And we've kind of talked about that a little bit, but over time you create and build processes that allow you to accelerate your business growth. Can you talk about a few other processes that you think have made a significant impact on what you were doing?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that a process for everything, I do think you can get a little bit too much into it. Like you can dissect it down to where, you know, it's too detailed, but you need an overall SOP, standard operating procedure or process, plus a script. Read something the other day. I can't remember the guy's name. His name is Alex, does like this gym stuff. You probably know who I'm talking about. He's a phenomenal new entrepreneur that I just started following on Twitter. He said the other day, if you want your business to grow and grow at scale, get your whole company to stick to the script. And I didn't quite understand really what that meant. And then I realized like, oh, that means everybody needs to do it the same way. Therefore, if it changes or it's breaking down, it's not the person, it's the process. And so at Kickprint, I have been obsessing for the last like year and a half to build this business as if I was going to sell it. Not that I intend to sell it, but as if I could. Like, what is the permissions? What is the SOP? So we built out a Monday.com board that is literally a process for everything. Like literally anyone could walk in here and know exactly what temperature to press something at. Like everything, and even down to calling out mesh counts, even if we are outsourcing it, we sort of know what those are based off of what we've done. And so there's an SOP for everything. The biggest thing is internal operations and the sales process, figuring out where the customer is in the buyer's journey, and then what steps need to be taken. I think the biggest one that's been the most effective for us is basically we have, imagine your customer, you have a prospect, you have a lead, you have someone who's qualified lead, meaning that just because they're interested in business with you doesn't mean they need to be your customer. So you get on the phone with them, qualify them, then they're qualified and you're proofing and quoting. Each of these steps that you're in need to have, hey, when they are a lead, how do you make them a qualified lead? When they're a qualified lead, how do you then go to proofing and quoting? When you're proofing and quoting, how do you get them to where they've given you sizes and they're waiting on an invoice? Once they pay the invoice and you mark them as one and it's sent to production, blah, 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 what do you do next? So we built out a post-order workflow, for example, and there's a team for every stage at Kickprint now. So when it's a prospect, there's a team that does outbound prospecting. There's a team that that qualifies leads. There's a team that now builds presentations. And it's literally written down. And you don't have to overcomplicate. You don't need all these different softwares to do it. Just, you know, if you want to simplify it down, build a folder in Drive and add a document and just make it 3 or 4 pages. And just say a summary at the top and then break down the steps. That's really all you need. You don't really need, a lot of people get hung up in the details of like, oh, what software and this and this. And this. You just need a process. And you need, if you can't hand a guide to someone and say, hey, in 90 days, I need you to make sales. Well, they don't need to learn what is in the ingredients of Plastisol Inc. in order to sell a t-shirt. You know, that's the thing, is we get so in deep in the process. People want an image on their shirt. How do you get them in the sales process into that? So basically what we've done, this was very uncomfortable for me. I'm very good at shooting from the hip. Like I don't have a script for this podcast. I looked over the questions, knew the answers, and got hopped on with you. But I realized that that's not how my team operates. And so we started obsessing over scripts and how to format those bold and underline and stuff like that, so that people could read them while they're talking to someone on the phone. And that's been a very hard process, but we have scripted out a lot of things. Most things is scripted, but then we became very robotic. Like everything was the same. And so we had to figure out how to inject personality. And so once we realized, for example, one of our scripts says, hey, Marshall, and then insert something about Marshall that you know. Well, in our CRMs, we have notes. Hey, I noticed that Marshall is a Florida State fan, despite the fact that I'm an LSU fan. So let's poke fun at him.
Hey, how so he beat us. So sorry about that game. You must have been crying.
Thankfully, I didn't watch it, but I did see a lot of mad Southern people. So, and a lot of happy Florida people. So I figure it was a good deal. But hey, that's just a note like that you do. It's very good to keep good notes about your customers. Have a good CRM. If you need help setting that up, you know, shoot me an email. I'll give you my info at the end. I can help you figure out how to set some of this stuff up. It's not really all that hard. The main thing is every step the customer's at. A lot of times I think we get hung up in the product, like the t-shirt. Where's the t-shirt at in the production process? Well, that's post-sale. So you got to break it down to sales and production and then have steps for each one. I think that's the main thing is where's your customer at in the buying process? That's sales. Where's the t-shirt at or where's the product at in the manufacturing process? That's production. And I think we get so hung up in where the shirt is, we don't even give a crap where the customer is. So that's just what the SOPs, we've built out steps. When did they call? Like, let me give you an example, an overview of our post-order workflow. As soon as they place an order, they are sent a handwritten customized postcard. The fun thing is it's all done through AI. None of it is actually handwritten. The pictures are customized to them. The front, the back of the postcard is handwritten and it's shipped. I mean, instantly, as soon as they place the order, that trigger fires off and my virtual assistant just looks over it and makes sure it's correct. So we don't want to send someone, hey, thanks for ordering t-shirts. And they didn't order, they ordered custom pop sockets or something like that. So that fires off. Then after the order has landed, we then send them a, how did you like your order? What could we have done differently, if anything? And then we get feedback at that point. And then it fires off another request 2 weeks later, asking them for a review on Google and Facebook. If they've already reviewed, we have that in our CRM. We don't ask them for that. Then we ask them 2 weeks later for referrals. We ask them for three and we offer them gift cards for every person they refer. Therefore, we turn in one customer into two customers. That post-order workflow has put tens of thousands of dollars in our business just doing that. That's just a small example of what an SOP is.
I love it. I love it. And, you know, it's been said that there are three aspects to every sale, right? It's the current, you know, whatever the thing is, right? There's the referral. And then there is the expanded sale, which is the what's next, right? They just ordered whatever coming up for them a month or 6 months or whatever. If there's another sales opportunity. So what is that?
Oh, that reminds me on the post-order workflow, there is one step that ties into that, Marshall. We actually offer them an immediate $50 off a reorder the same day they order. And we say it expires in a week. And if someone just spent money, the best time to get them to buy is now because they're in the buying mindset. As soon as they close that gate doesn't close for a little while. So if you want to sell people, upsell, do it immediately after they buy, not right before they pay their invoice. The reason why is because one, you're going to derail the t-shirt project or derail the main job with koozies and shirts. But if you're wanting to like bump your, let's say you want to bump your t-shirt orders with pins, koozies, stickers, a lot of times we go, hey, thank you so much for placing your order. We're giving you $50 off. And then we actually explain, you go, well, now you're probably wondering, Marshall, why we're giving you $50 off an order when you just placed an order. Say, well, we want to help you grow your business. And we make it all about them, not about how great we are. And say, we know you're a smart person. We know you like to take advantage of good opportunities. So we're going to give you this opportunity to grow your business, but we're not going to leave you empty handed. We're going to give you $50 off. Or it's 10% off up to $50. But here's the real kicker is when you give people discounts, I see a lot of people giving out 10%, 20%. People don't know what the value of that is. If they don't even know what it costs. Like I seen a deal the other day. It's like 20% off patios. I'm like, well, what does a patio cost? Like 40 grand or 10 grand or 5 grand. But if it's at $500 off your patio, that's an intrinsic value. So what we did was, is we show a $50 bill and we send them a $50 bill in the email. And then we explain what is in the $50 bill. Seeing that $50 bill, it's like, oh man, they're giving me $50. Just like Kohl's cash. I got the idea from Kohl's cash. The Kohl's will send my wife freaking Kohl's cash. And then we end up going to Kohl's to spend $10. And I'm offering her $100 to stay at home and not go to Kohl's. But that concept works. It gets people showing up and spending money. So that's, yeah.
That's good. And are you a pay 100% of the invoice upfront guy?
Yes. If we can't be done, I actually only have one net 30 customer. And it's because unless someone signals to us that they will never do business with us, or if they have to pay up front, then everybody's paid up front. We've taken $32,000. That's, you know, up front from a customer that paid 100% up front. If a customer requests a net 30, we always rebuttal with 50-50. We try to negotiate our way out of that to cut down cash flow issues. I have one customer, I know him personally, and basically we worked with them. We did like seven jobs for them, big contracting company, same thing every 3 or 4 months. So it's easy recurring money. And they had a shift in the billing department and they's like, hey, you know, we can't be prepaying and putting stuff on credit cards. It has to be. So they asked for net 30. I rebutted with a net 7. And I said, I need a net 7. And I thought they would get mad at that. They complied. So I said, give me a net 7. And it starts when you cut the purchase order, not when you receive the goods. Deal? Deal. Yeah. So there's been times where we got paid the check before we even ordered the shirts, you know? So that's the only customer I do that with, that we honestly just assume the sale and free. We don't explain it. I mean, people are buying stuff on Amazon. They're not net 30ing Amazon. So they're really just move forward with the sales process as if they know they have to prepay. And then when they ask the question, almost sound shocked, like, oh, you were expecting to pay after you got the goods? Oh, okay. Sorry. I didn't think to, you know, I didn't know that would be a concern. Yeah, we require 100% payment up front and just shut up and leave it at that. You don't have to explain and what we do this because of this and this, and that makes you sound untrustworthy. Just say it and then be done. And that's it.
Like what you hear so far? Be sure to subscribe so you can get the latest from Success Stories. And now here's Devin Freet with the SNS Spotlight.
Learning more about trends, eye-catching decoration techniques, and unique apparel styles is the key to adding more value to your clients' orders. On our YouTube series, Decoration Myths, we're teaching you all that and more. By taking on challenging placements, products, and misconceptions about decorating, we'll show you that those hurdles are just opportunities to deliver something elevated and unique to your clients. So, if you're having trouble on the press or looking for some decoration inspiration, check out Decoration Myths on the SNS Activewear YouTube channel. Thanks for listening.
So many business owners that I speak with, Jonathan, do not have a good grasp on their time management. They're usually caught doing the wrong tasks or not prioritizing their time like they should. And especially the owners, they get caught into doing all these things, you know, you shouldn't be doing. So I know that you have specific ideas on this. So can you elaborate on how you not only prioritize your time, but manage the chaos of being a business owner?
Yeah, this is a really big one, very big one, because a lot of business owners think they own a business when in reality, the business owns them and they don't realize that. So I build this around three reasons. Why do entrepreneurs start businesses to begin with? Number one, to hopefully make more money. To two, because they're passionate about what they do. And number three, to get more time and more freedom. Well, if you're not making money, you hate what you do, and you're there all the time, you would be better to sell your business, liquidate your assets, and go get a job. You actually would probably have a better quality of life. We get so hung up on working for ourselves that we don't realize our kids are growing up. Our kids are, you're only going to be little one time. And once your kids grow up, that's it. They're grown. And so that's been a realization to me. Another thing is segmenting your time down, understanding the reality of time. Let me give you an example of what I mean by that. I heard this the other day. This isn't original to me. I'd love to claim it, but I do think of it now as something I think of constantly. My parents live in Mississippi, on the border of Mississippi and Louisiana. I see them 3 or 4 times a year. And so my parents are in their 60s. If they live another 10 years, I basically, in my mind, you know, you think of it, well, I have 10 years with my parents. I hope they live longer than 10 years. But in reality, I don't get to see them every day in 10 years. I see them 2 or 3 times a year. So in reality, I've got 30 more visits with my parents. And when you think of that and segment your time down, like, hey, my son is 7 years old. And in 11 years from now, he's going to be 18. And if he's like me in a free spirit, he's out of here. And I don't like that, but that's reality. So I only have 11 Christmases. I only have 11 summers. And once you break it down like that, you know, it really doesn't matter that that whiny customer needs 10 shirts and needs them 6-color front and 8-color back. No, you need to prioritize set minimums based off your quality of life and understand that time is the one thing you cannot get back, but money you can get. Literally, we went from a t-shirt business to a snow cone business. And to be honest with you, I could easily make Snow Monster as big or bigger than Kickprint just by duplicating the business over and over and over. So I'm telling you this because the way that you prioritize your time, you are not going to prioritize your time if you don't have an importance of time. If you're just farting around and don't care, or you don't want to be around your kid, or you're not aware that your kids are growing up and your parents are dying, and you don't have that mortality in your mindset, then you're not going to have urgency. So you need to, first of all, have urgency and realize that every breath you take is not life. That is one step closer to death. I know that sounds morbid, but once you realize that, then you're going to have urgency and you're not going to just take crappy orders. You're not just going to spend your time dealing with whiny customers. You're going to take quality customers and build quality systems to compress and maximize time. So the first thing is, the number one factor that we have internally here is I have on our sales board, we have a little, all my salespeople are remote now. So we don't have anybody in the office anymore. Everybody works from home. So the salespeople do. It says this: who can give me the most money the fastest and with the least amount of friction? And that is our guiding factor. So if we got a 500-piece shirt order, that's one color and they've got the sizes, and we've got team jersey, but they're the whiniest, they're the most friction and it's going to be less profit. So we let the people know, hey, letting you know that we are a little backed up. It's going to be until tomorrow before I can get back with you. If that's going to be an issue, please let me know. I have some recommendations for you. And then we recommend them to our favorite competitor. So, but I mean, we're not going to see, the problem is there's old saying, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. Problem is you're spending all of your day greasing squeaky wheels and not fueling the engine of your car. And money is the thing that makes the world go around, whether you like it or not. If you're not making money doing what you do and you're not being profitable with it, then you could be better off right now working. You can work from home for $30, $40 an hour right now. So like, it's like literally is time to work for someone else if you really aren't making money, enjoying what you do, and have free time. So if you don't have those three things, you maybe should consider, do you really need to be an entrepreneur? Later in life, are you going to be like, hey, I own my own business? Or you're going to be like, I wish I spent more time with my kids when they were little and talked to my parents more and vacation a little more. You're not going to care that you spend 80 hours in the shop. So who can give me the most money, the fastest, with the least friction? That's what we go after. And we do sometimes piss people off because we put them on the back burner. But I caught my salespeople talking to somebody who wanted 10 shirts, you know, and wanted them yesterday. And then I had someone email me the other day, and it was just a while back, but they had 1,000 employees, had a $30 per employee budget. That's a big freaking order. I was like, why is this person not the number one call that is made and they're ready to rock and roll right now? And we're sitting here talking to little league teams. And I hit the roof. And so sometimes you do have to jump in on your team because the squeaky wheel gets the grease sometimes because people are afraid of those people that's whining. I'm sorry, but the customer is not always right. It has its place. It's not the case anymore. You have to prioritize your time or you're going to be spinning your wheels.
So this all comes down to really educating your staff on what should be a priority. Because we could always make another dollar, but we can't make another minute.
Yeah, and absolutely.
Like, what do we need to be working on right now? And I can tell you, because, you know, me, I talk to 8 gazillion people a week, that a lot of people, they tell me all the time, Jonathan, I just don't have time for this. I just don't have time for this. And I always correct them. I go, no, you have the time. It's just not a priority for you.
Right.
And you'd be shocked right now with how many calls that I've had where the shop owner, they don't have any sales and they're not doing well and things are all upside down. And I'll go, hey, tell me, describe to me the sales actions and processes that you did yesterday. What did you do? How many calls did you make? What did you do? Whatever, you know, whatever you did, lay it out for me. And they'll go, well, we didn't really do anything. I was too busy burning screens. Yeah. And I go, well, you know why you have a sales problem? It's because you don't have any sales actions. You're not doing anything that's going to cause the sales process to move forward because you're just sitting there stuck in the mud complaining that you don't have any sales. And
most times it's because they're honestly afraid of sales. I've did it myself or done it myself, whatever is the correct way to say that. But I've done that before where I would go to the shop or get in the grind and I would be doing something that, you know, an employee should be doing. And once I realized like, hey, this is how you need to value yourself. You need to ask yourself this question. If you got sick right now and you needed to hire someone to run your company and they ran it exactly how you run it, how much would you have to pay them? You know, once I realized that, I stopped doing things that I could hire employees for and I started empowering employees. You don't need to be doing $12 an hour tasks if you would have to hire someone to replace you at $150,000 a year. You need to do $150,000 a year task. And then you need to divide that up by an hourly time frame and say, how much would you be paying yourself per hour on a 40-hour week? And then if you're not making $200 an hour, then you don't need to deal with it. And so we now have an EHR, which is an effective hourly rate is what we call it. And that's what it's called, not what we call it. But we then break it down and I have my sales manager saying, hey, how does this impact our EHR? And at first they're like, well, what does that matter? I said, well, you know, are you willing to work past 4:30 tonight to 5:30 to make up for wasting time on this 10-piece order? No. Okay. Well, then basically we have X amount of time to make our money. And so you need to compress that with jobs. Now, if you don't have leads coming in, you have to solve that. I can help you. If you know, need some help with that, reach out to me. But you have to get acquisition first. But you know, you don't have a system for acquisition and a system for follow-up and a system for post-order follow-up. You're going to be chasing discounting your product frantically one month and the next month claiming that you're slammed. And if you have that problem where you're like, we're going to go out, and then literally 30 days later, you're posting now hiring ads, that is a symptom that you don't have systems. That is a symptom of a bigger problem that you do not have a systematic business, that you have a reactionary business. And you may very well not be in business long if you don't build systems. And that should be the bigger sign. And that's what really opened to me. Everybody gets hung up on brokering or printing in-house. So that is, the sales process is the same. I would say this, if you print in-house or you broker, you should always, unless you're a contract printer, but if you're doing direct to sales, you should always act as if you like sell it as if you were outsourcing. And here's why, because life happens. If a bus runs through your shop or something explodes and burns your shop to the ground, you don't need to be out of business. You just simply outsource your stuff. You know, you have to think in terms of what happens in life. So I think the big thing going back to that is like with sales, a lot of people just don't want to make sales calls. They're afraid of hearing a customer's voice. You gotta get past that. You know,
they're afraid of the no, Jonathan. That's the problem. They're afraid of somebody saying no. And to me, no is a good thing. Because no usually could mean no, and you have to waste your time with them ever again. But it could also mean not right now. Like you can't really sell hoodies in July, right? Because it's like 9 million degrees, right? So, you know, right. So it's like one of these things where, you know, what would it take? Or can I call you back? Or you're getting more information. And, you know, Nelson Mandela had a really great quote, which is, I never lose. I either learn or win, right? And by getting that no, that helps you figure out what you need to do to get to the yes, right? And that's in every sales Bible ever. So,
yep, absolutely. Just don't be afraid of that no. And here's the thing, the more you do those intimidating sales calls, the more you're going to be calloused over the no. You know, my wife just started doing like MMA, and I was extremely intimidated and scared. And I just kept showing up. I'm still very new. I'm still a white belt, but you know, I'm not as scared. Like I'm now, you know, sparring and live with guys bigger than me and more experienced, and doesn't scare me when a few weeks ago that would scare me to death. So, you know, doing things more often, probably the reason why you're afraid to make sales calls, because you don't make sales calls. Pick up the phone, make sales calls, and then listen to your customers, and they may cuss you out. They may get mad that you're going to hear, but once you face those things and make 500 or 600 calls, you can easily make another 500 or 600 calls and it'd be way easier. So, yeah. You know, if you're listening to this, if you're in the shop, you're sweeping floors and burning screens and stuff, and you've got people for that instead, you're doing it because you're hiding, you know, get out of the shop, go in the office, make calls, talk to those bigger clients. You'll see your business grow. And it's really not rocket science. That's pretty much it.
Perfect. Preach it. Love it. Lastly, let's focus on your business partner and wife, Danielle. How do you guys manage to work with your spouse in the business? So spill the beans on how you guys manage that, because I don't think I could ever work with my wife. So how are you guys doing that?
Yeah, that's a loaded one. Well, a few things here. One, you got to have a mutual respect and enjoy being around them daily. But that is not always the case. Like, most people that know me and Danielle, they see us constantly together. We ride to work together. We work out together. We hunt together. We're always together. We love being around each other. But what people don't see is we do fight. We do disagree. And we do crave time away from each other sometimes. And so understanding that and having a clear communication has helped. The biggest thing to understand, or I'd say the number one factor, is respect for each other and respecting the position in and out of the home. Let me give an example. We first started Kickprint. You know, we had some issues where Danielle was being the boss and I was being the boss, and I would go in the shop and she would go in the shop and we'd say different things. And Danielle loved to run presses at times. It was just like zen and relaxation to her. And me, I had a different set of stuff. And so sometimes we would go in and it caused an issue where you can't have two leaders. That's two heads equals a monster. So we had created our own little monster at Kickprint our employees were very frustrated for a while. They were going, okay, well, Danielle said do this, and you said do that. And we started having really big issues to the point to where either Danielle was going to go and leave the business, or I was going to leave the business, or the business was going to shut down. That's how bad it got. And then what we did is we basically sat down. I was like, hey, you know, I love you more than anything in the world. How can we make this work? And we realized that we had to have roles in and out of the home. We can't just go in and just both be the boss. And that's when I decided that I'm the CEO. We decided I'm the CEO and the boss at Kickprint. If I make the final call, that call stands. If it's financial, I relinquish that to Danielle. And then Danielle asked that if she is dealing with financial stuff, that she not have to talk to the clients that she's making this financial decision for. Let me give an example. I'll say, hey, I just ran this by my accounting department. We can't approve you for net 30. Well, they go, let me talk to them. Say, sorry, they don't have a phone line. I can talk to you. I can tell you it's not going to happen. She doesn't like that kind of confrontation with clients. So once we figured out, like literally just said it and then wrote it down, JT's the owner. He's going to run the production. He's going to run sales. The final call runs through him. And then I have a sales manager. I had a production manager. We run those, you know, I give them their duties. When they have issues, they don't go to Danielle. They go to me. When it's financial or like, hey, my paycheck didn't come through, Danielle does all finances and books. Once we respected each other in those roles and have respect, like now, a lot of times, like Danielle literally believes in me and thinks that I could do anything in the world. I think that's very powerful. She really thinks that I could do things that I don't believe in myself, and vice versa. So that actually is a big thing. Like not everybody should work together. And it doesn't mean if you can't work with your spouse that you don't love them and you don't believe in them. So I'm not saying that, but I'm saying if you choose to work with your spouse, you're going to have to not look at them as they're an idiot, you know, because if you think they can't do it, then it is going to come out of your mouth because you spend all of your time at work, a lot of your time at work and with your spouse. And so when you're never away, the filter leaves and you start really hurting each other, whether you realize it or not. So you got to be careful of that.
Do you have rules like we don't talk about work at home?
No, we don't, because a lot of people do. They set those boundaries. You know, if we weren't passionate about what we do, then I think we probably would just be like, let's not do that. However, because we talk about it all day long, we just end up not talking about it as much at home. When we go home, you know, we got a farmhouse and all that for a reason. Our business is in town and it's very, you know, in town type stuff. But when we're at our house, it's chickens and deer and woods. We literally live in the woods. Like, it is literally in the middle of nowhere. So it's like a different world when we go home. So because of that, that kind of changes the landscape. And we often don't talk about work as much. But, you know, if we didn't talk about work at home, if something come up, I'm not going to be like, hey, I need to talk to you about this, but we need to get in the car and go to work so we can talk about it. That, I don't know. So whatever boundaries, like if you start looking at your spouse, you're less attracted to them because now they're a business owner or a business partner and you don't view them as like your mate as much. I think you probably need to set some boundaries or maybe have the discussion. Your marriage is more important than your business. At least I think so. So I think you need to set those boundaries and be respectful. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't mean you failed as a couple. It just doesn't work out for some people. For us, it's drawn us closer. Growing a business together we've fallen in love way more working together than if we worked apart.
Because you see another side of somebody.
Well, here's another thing too. So going back to the respect, Danielle is the boss at Snow Monster. Because we had been down this road with Kickprint, it made things way easier with Snow Monster. So I immediately established Danielle's the boss. Danielle's the boss. People come to me because I'm the face of it and I did the marketing for it. But it was actually pretty cool to be like, I actually don't operate Snow Monster. I mean, I own it, but I'm not the operator. I can't even really make a good snowball. So you don't want me making snowballs. Danielle gets big into the concoction, the creations. Now, what I do is I look at the numbers. Like, for example, in Square, it tells you what customers have lapsed, which customers haven't been in 6 weeks. So I can build an email campaign and shoot out and go, you haven't been here in 6 weeks. Here's $2 off your order. Come back. And then I try to decrease those lapse numbers. That's stuff Danielle's not going to do. Like, she doesn't like care about that. She cares about the operations and the quality and the team. And that's been really big. At Kickprint, I'm the boss. But here's with the reality, though. You have to have that, like, respect. There's an old saying when I was in ministry full time, just quick story. I was a youth pastor. I was a teenager. I jumped up and there was like 70 kids in this building. I guess they weren't worshiping God how I thought so. So I blasted them and I'm just kind of like being harsh behind the pulpit. And the pastor got up and he was like, yeah, you know, and he was supporting me. And after the event, he called me in his office and then totally just let me have it. I said, hold on a second. You just said in front of all of those people that I was right, like you agreed with me. He goes, yeah, because leadership stands with leadership. He goes, if I'd have got up and told everyone you're an idiot like you really are, they would have never followed you again. And so once we realized that leadership stands with leadership, and that always stuck with me. You know, if Danielle calls me a moron or I say she's an idiot at Snow Monster, you know, I mean, we talk pretty blunt to each other. That might not be how people talk, but we're just pretty hardcore we just say what's on our mind. But if I were to do that in front of her employees at Snow Monster, do you think they would follow her as well? Probably not. Same thing. So she treats me with respect at Kickprint, and sometimes she will blatantly disagree and she'll pull me aside and go, hey, I think you need to rethink about this. This is not a wise decision, blah, blah, blah. And then I'll come out and make it look like it was my decision to change my mind. Versus her going, well, I don't agree with that. And I think that's the biggest issue is if you have to have that respect, you can't get in arguments or, you know, in front of your staff and then expect them to take you seriously. There has to be a flow of command. Somebody has to be in control and you have to decide that. And if you can't decide that, you can't work together, period. Like if you can't figure out who's the boss, then you can't work together. And so Kickprint, I run things. Snow Monster, she runs things. The reality is behind the scenes, we both discuss things. But I make it like someone had to be fired at Snow Monster. She goes, can you fire them? I go, nope, that's you. I said, you're the boss there, not me. I said, I'm going to eat your snow cones. I'm going to come in and, you know, high five people and hug and kiss babies. And I'm getting in the truck and leaving. I said, but I'll help you run the numbers. I'll make sure that's, you know, whatever. I said, you know, same thing at Kickprint. If I got to fire somebody, I got to reprimand, I'll do that. And once we set those boundaries, everything, that's really the big thing is respect. If you can't determine who is in control, what's the flow of things? I will tell you this, though. Let's just say, hypothetically, someone's listening to this. Their husband got a wife in the shop, okay? And your wife can be a major compass for the heartbeat of your business. It's a great asset. I think it's one of my competitive edge is having Danielle in my corner, believing in me. I'd say this too. This isn't a marriage seminar on this podcast, but I will say this. You know, a lot of times you want to, like, it's easy to insult the person you live with every day because you see their weaknesses. Learn to see their strengths because other people see it and you need to see those strengths. That's something that we have done. Danielle didn't believe in herself very much, you know, with Snow Monster. And then I started really building her up and man, she has created things that have caused thousands of people to show up. Like, I mean, our first weekend, we was tooled for 100 people, 500 people showed up. You know, it looked like a concert at a snow cone stand. We had just unrealistic, but she created the products. The products made it easy to market and working together. You know, she told me, hey, thank you for believing me. And then with Kickprint, I'm like, thank you for believing in me. I actually have a hard time getting on podcasts because I get self-conscious about how I sound. And if I sound dumb or whatever, she's been the biggest person. Like, you need to get on podcasts. You need to talk. Like, you're good at this. So I think that's a big thing. You have to respect each other. If you don't have that respect, you should definitely not work for each other because you will destroy your marriage.
Well, that's perfect. And I'm so happy that you came on the podcast today, John.
Yeah, me too, man. It was fun.
Thank you for sharing your story of success with us today. So what is the best way to contact you if someone wants to learn more about what you do or how you can help them?
The best way is email. Don't call and don't call my office because my team has been trained to push everyone to spam that asks for me. So if you call the office asking for JT and doesn't matter what you say, I've instructed them to not connect you. They will then connect you in email if it's important. Email will go straight to me and I will respond. It's JT, just what everybody calls me, Jonathan Tynes, JT@kickprint.com. And that's it. That's all there is to it.
Awesome. Well, hey, thanks a lot, Jonathan. Appreciate you, buddy.
Thank you very much.
Well, that's our show today. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe so you can stay up to date on the latest Success Stories episodes. Have any suggestions for future guests or topics? Send them my way at marshall@marshallatkinson.com, and we'll see you next time.